Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And you want whales? We got whales. We're going to talk about whales and other things too, other than whales, because our guest author was on the show before with her book about the emissary, and that was a wonderful book about whales and dolphins. And now I've read three of her other books since then. One of them is Before We Leave You. That's about dolphins and whales fearing their extinction, actually. Our oceans are becoming so polluted, and also other reasons why their lives are in danger. And another book called No More Secrets, No More Lies, and another book called Atlantis Rising. Really fascinating work. I'm so happy to have Patricia Corey back on the show. Patricia, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be back with you, Peter.
Thank you. So we should start off talking about whales, because we do have a lot to talk about. We only have a half an hour, so I'm sure we're going to have another show sometime in the future continuing this, because people will want to know more. But you're a channel, and you receive messages, and that's really what happened in the first book that we talked about. Was a novel where the emissary was a woman who actually was hearing from the whales and then realized their dilemma. And you're hearing from whales too, so tell us about that.
I'm not sure how you want me to address that question.
Well,
you mean my,
as
you want
a channeler,
about my experience?
No, as a channeler, your experience was also shown in the book, The Emissary, where you came across whales that were dying. So they started to talk to you. So I want to hear more about the way whales communicate with you.
Okay, well, it began, I'm a channel for the Syrian High Council, which you've picked up by reading the other books. And on this council of beings of sixth dimensional density, there sits a group called the Committee of Kikwalki, which is the name the whales give themselves, according to this source. And they are ascended whales and dolphins who are, believe it or not, I think that in your community, it's not hard for people to embrace the possibility that not only people potentially ascend, but also animals. And so the whales and dolphins are highly evolved beings, and they work on many levels. And I understand that they exist on many different planets as well. So we've got extraterrestrial whales and dolphins. We also have extra-dimensional whales and dolphins. And I started hearing from them, the earthbound whales and dolphins, telepathically, back years ago when I was teaching a workshop in Jordan. In the middle of the workshop, I started to hear these calls of despair, pleading for help. And I was transported into a scene, again telepathically, where I was underwater and these whales and dolphins were frantically thrashing about in a very chaotic state. However, I was standing in front of 150 people teaching. So I called a break, ran out of the room, and tried to compose myself, and had a very difficult time finishing the day. And at the end of the day, when I went back to my hotel, I learned on the news that 150 whales and dolphins had just beached themselves in a very painful death in New Zealand. So I know that I was having some sort of telepathic communion with that disaster and all of that grief. For whatever reason, I didn't know, but that's how telepathy is. And that was the first one. It happened again a few months later, and it kept happening until finally I asked for what was the purpose of me having to endure these things, and was there a message? And the messages start to pour through, which are contained in the book Before We Leave You.
And that's about the potential of this planet becoming extinct of whales and dolphins.
It is. It's also about their appeal to the human race to understand that the Earth is a musical instrument, a singing sphere, a live celestial being, and that all of us contribute in some way to that musical frequency, and the whales and dolphins' particular role on this planet is to hold the musical balance of our oceans in harmony, which is for the emotional health as well as the physical health of the planet.
Right, and the sounds that they make have been studied by scientists and have incredible complexity to them.
They do. In fact, the humpback whale song can last up to 35, 40 minutes without repeating, which is quite remarkable. And it can be sent out, I'm told, thousands of miles. Thousands of miles.
So the whale sounds, right, the whale sounds are all around us in the oceans. And
that's correct.
And they can pick up their sounds from each other, and our machines can, but we can't necessarily hear that.
But it seems to me that if they're sending out their song 1,000 miles or more, and then we now have researchers who are able to identify that the sounds are being picked up at a certain level because musicians and researchers are playing music into the, let's say a musician in Guadalupe is working with the whales and dolphins, and this is the case, sending music into the ocean that they respond to and play back to them. And then this is relayed around the planet where researchers more than 1,000 miles away are able to say, we just picked up your melody. Yeah. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
It means that they are...
They're relaying it, right.
Relaying, and they're relaying with intelligence. This is a new pattern I've just picked up. Listen. And then the whale at that point, wherever that is, 1,000 miles or more away, is then playing, repeating that song. So something very important is going on here.
Yeah, and we have to pay attention to the picture of the whales, but also the idea of their resonance being important for the health of our planet.
Could you ask me again, please?
We need to respect the fact that they're not only that about them, but that their resonance is important for the health of the planet.
Absolutely, and that is something that I'm very concerned about, and that is how do we explore and understand more about the greater function of this music and how it globally affects the planet more than just being mating calls and other known, let's say, expressions of that music. But is this a much more important aspect to the music, and what are we doing to protect it? And, of course, anyone who reads my books and hears me speak knows I am very, very concerned about sonar and other distortions in the oceans that are destroying that music.
Yes, and that's critical that the government has no respect for the subtleties of life and the needs of animals in the sea, for instance, to not be interfered with. And also all the fishermen out there that are capturing anything in their nets, it doesn't matter what.
Right, and then there are the oil drillings and the recreational vehicles. It's not just the Navy that is disturbing these beings, but we've got so many things going on in the ocean, and we won't even talk about human waste and plastic. And let's say it, the oceans are under siege at the moment.
Right.
And it's something that we have to reverse.
And one thing that people don't understand is that the oil drilling is hammering. And if sound can travel thousands of miles in the ocean, and all these drills underwater are constantly hammering, It's pretty disruptive to the life of sea life.
I liken it to the idea of imagining that you've got a drill going. What do you call those big drills that they use on building sites?
Pneumatic drills.
That's the one. In your living room. And at the same time, you have a fire engine in your kitchen that is sending out shrill alarms. And this is a potential thing that happens repeatedly, recurringly. You would clearly go insane immediately. And yet this is happening in our oceans. It's constant around the planet. Sonar with the new 5-year military Navy programs are all out war on the oceans. Sonar, laser sonar, which I don't even understand what that is yet, electronic frequencies, bombs, explosions, you name it. And we will, and then add to that the drilling of oil companies, wrecked boats, even those silly little jet skis. It's quite a shocker.
It all adds up. And then you look at the proliferation of human life on this planet, and it's not that we have too large a population. It's just that we have too large an ignorant population that isn't respecting ourselves and life. And it's just a greedy, take no holds bars, take everything. It's a life of extreme, and we need to become more conscious. And that's a lot of what else you write about, is the coming age that we're in, or it's not coming, but it's still evolving, that we're in a time where it's so obvious to so many of us how bad it is, how, and on all levels of propaganda, of poor education, that we're focused all on bigger, better, more. There's no understanding of the inner. It's more about the outer. And yet, because we know all this, and we're making ourselves nuts about it because we're so frustrated that life is so stupid on this planet, I think because of that, you know, we are preparing, not because of it, but as part of that, we're preparing for much more consciousness. And your books are a lot about the history of humankind. And it's fascinating to me. The first thing I read in one of your books that it floored me. And I've always said that humans have been brought here, not... We didn't evolve, and actually science doesn't have a consistent thread of our evolution. There are a lot of guesses and hopscotches through history to make assumptions of how we evolved, and certainly into four different races. And none of that can be explained. And they don't bother explaining it. They just said, we know better. You know, so science doesn't really know better. And I believe that human life exists all around the universe in different forms, and sometimes in our form. But the different forms that it takes is what actually brought us here, because the Council of Elders out there, you know, these higher beings who kind of have a broader view of the universe, realized that this planet could do well with a very advanced life form on it, and it could really nourish the planet and nourish consciousness. And so in your book, you talk about how four different races came from four different planets. That was really a shock to me to understand that, because I never heard it before, but it makes sense. And they were brought here for the purpose of creating hybrids, of melding, and of creating the strength, because each race has its strong limitations and its strong gifts. And if we can bring all the gifts together, then we'll minimize the limitations. So how does that sound about my interpretation of your writing?
It's a beautiful interpretation, and I want to backtrack to what you said about the scientists not knowing and remind people that there's this constant challenge about science versus spirit. Fortunately, we're merging now more than we have in many, many cycles or many, many even centuries, but that the science has been getting away with saying things like there's a missing link, or it's gray matter, or it's junk DNA. And I find this ludicrous that science gets to be empirical and say we know best and everything else is conjecture, and we have the proof, and they still get away with saying these terms of ambiguity. You can't say you've got a scientific solution to a question when you say we've got it all figured out except for the missing link. Go back to the drawing board, because if there's a missing link in your formula, then your formula doesn't work.
Right.
So throughout time, man has searched for the answer to our own existence as a species, as a race, and as beings of guardianship of this planet. And indeed, my books attempt to explain that, and I feel it's one of the more credible explanations, because you can't tell me that a blonde, white-haired, blonde Nordic Viking, let's say, has a direct link to the deepest African
DNA.
DNA, there's the word.
Yeah.
On this planet, it doesn't work for me. It's like saying if you put a a zebra, a horse, a goat, and let's see what else. Okay, let's say a zebra, a horse, and a goat in the same room, and say they all came, they all originated as a certain aspect of one of these creatures. It's possible. But it's also possible that they're separate and distinct species.
That's the point. And yet, all races, human races are human. So our DNA is quite identical in many ways and different in other ways, and sourced from a different place.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's also similar and different to many animals. So
right.
The question of what pieces put together create what life forms is what is exciting the scientists now, because they're starting to play God with creation. And what the Syrian High Council say is that there was a committee of light beings, of extraterrestrial and extra-dimensional beings, who did the same thing and said, let's put together some seriously interesting DNA of different species and seed this planet with a life form that will thrive in the many different ecosystems, and that will go on to be the dominant species on the planet. Now, with an answer to your question about too many people on the planet, you know, this is a very delicate subject, because if you speak to the fact that there are too many people, you immediately get labeled as someone who is in favor of depopulation. And I'm not, because that is sinister at best. However, I do think it's time that we do some serious birth control on this planet, because we are driving the Earth to extinction on so many levels because of our need for consumption. And I also agree with you that if we're more conscious citizens, the planet can sustain a certain volume. But my gosh, I really think that as we are approaching 8 billion people on this planet, and we hear things like the Chinese are now going to mow down a whole mountain range to create new space for buildings, and we see what's happening to the oceans, it is really time to start considering how we can slow down without destroying, but to slow down the runaway birth problem on the planet long enough to give this planet a breather where we can work on solutions. And one of these is a more succinct birth control program.
Right. And my sense is that we're getting wiser, even though it looks like we're getting stupider, because I think it's obvious, all the flaws. And at some point, so many of the lies that are being told to us just become transparent, and people start realizing what the truth is. And maybe, I don't know how much longer we need for that to happen. One of the problems is that we actually are not an evolved human species. We were originally, but our DNA has been shorted, and we don't have the full 12 strands. And it's not 12 strands, because people say, well, you have a double helix. How is anything else going to fit in? And, you know, it's complete the way it is. I've talked to genetics saying there's no way that DNA can change. It's just
well,
that we have
to
know
more. They
can't get
away with saying that and tell us that we've got 92% junk DNA in our bodies.
Right, and we're only using 10% or less of our brains.
Right, so if they're saying there's no more room for any more DNA, well, then what about the stuff they're calling junk? What's that? Where's that? What's it doing? And they say, well, they don't really know what these particles do. Well, then you can't trust the science is what I'm getting at, because these statements that they make are contradictory.
Well, they just want to believe there's nothing more known but what they know. But the future of DNA, it doesn't have to do with adding more to the double helix so much as creating triangulation around it.
Yeah, well, helping the particles, let's say 90, it's been between 92 and I've heard up to 96% of our DNA is out of use, junk DNA, that just happens to be floating around in there because of the great designer, which I like to think of God as the great mathematician or the great architect, must have been on vacation or drank too much nectar of the gods and forgot that 92% of our intelligent architecture, our codes, light codes, are malfunctioning. So obviously that doesn't work for me. I'm sure it doesn't work for a lot of people who just stopped to take time to think about it. No, there is no junk inside of us. Everything has a function. And because we don't know what that is, all the more reason to start investigating and exploring it.
I've had a geneticist say to me that we need junk. It's there for a reason. And they don't know what the reason is, but as long as it's there, there must be a reason.
Well, of course.
And the reason might...
And, you know, when you talk about the brain also, we're only using 6 or 7% of our brain. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this correlates directly with the gray matter, which would be the 3%, and the DNA, which is what, wow, junk DNA is about 93%, is connected, or at least was connected, and that when we figure out how to reconnect all that data into this incredible bioelectric unit of consciousness that each of us is, we will be fully activated, I believe, fully Christed walking beings on this planet.
Right. And so the DNA that we're looking for is not necessarily more DNA that can tell our cells how to work better so much as create more consciousness and more power in our consciousness to actually control ourselves better.
Well, I hate the word control, but to experience ourselves better, surely.
Yeah.
I would like to suggest that with 2 strands of DNA, we are sort of built-in polarity units, because the two strands are unresolved. When you create triangulation, which is when a third strand of DNA becomes activated, it crystallizes, and this might be a little esoteric for some people, but I'll put it out there, it crystallizes a sacred form. And that's very exciting information. What does this junk DNA do? What are all these little particles that they know are there, they just don't know their purpose?
Right.
So if you know it's there, let's figure out what it does. And I work with people trying to help them master how to call that DNA back into the light and how to weave that light back into the double helix. And it's very exciting what's evolving.
Well, what you're talking about is revelation, to have information, because genetic science doesn't have these answers, and they're not expecting to have them very shortly about junk DNA. So it might just be that so much of science evolves through revelation. In other words, through channeling, through receiving data. It feels like inspiration. Feels like, oh my God, I just realized something no one's ever realized before. And where did that come from? That's the magic of our minds and our higher consciousness working with the larger universe. So I do believe that a lot of new understandings are kind of come through geniuses, people who have inspirations that actually come from higher sources. And I think most genius does come from that.
I agree. And whatever that is, whatever it is that allows us to connect with that source, I do like to remind people that even though we think of ourselves as being trapped in the third dimension, we are multidimensional beings. We have access to every layer of consciousness. We dream, we astral journey, and we pluck out of somewhere incredible ideas that we then make manifest in this world. We don't give ourselves enough credit for our potential and who we really are, what we are remembering about who we are.
Yeah, this is very good. And we're coming near the end of the show, so I want to go over how people can read your books and learn more about you. What website would be good for them?
Well, for people that are interested in the earlier books that you've alluded to, my main website is SirianRevelations.net.
Sirian.
And that's S-I-R-I-A-N,
right.
Revelations. And there's a lot of information there, and it talks about all of my books, but much, much more. It's a big site, so I welcome people to go explore all the information there. And for my my new book, The Emissary, it has its own site, which is theemissary.net. I'm also all over the Internet, and people can find many interviews and videos that I've taken part in by Googling Patricia Corey. That should do it.
Right. Patricia Corey, C-O-R-I.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. And certainly we want to talk more, and there's so much that you have to offer, so I really appreciate you being on Energy Stew. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be back with you, and I'd love to come back on. You just let me know when.
Thanks so much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter@HeartRiver, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. I have lots of classes going on, all kinds of good stuff. And thank you so much for listening.